The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the ReliefFactor.com studio, live inside the Beltway on this Friday. I remind you that if you have not downloaded the Salem News Channel app, you should. You should be watching me on TV in your kitchen. You ought to have a Roku-enabled TV device or one of the devices that allows you Fire, etc. to watch the Salem News Channel as you go about your morning and say hello to me. And, you know, I roll a lot of videotape. You'll see a lot of videotape, and you'll see a lot of guests occasionally when we can get them to Skype in. I want to begin today with Winsome Sears, because some of you heard her speech in the first hour yesterday, said, wow, who is she? Now, look, I mentioned Winsome Sears throughout the year. Mostly I had Glenn Youngkin on, because Glenn Youngkin was the top of the ticket, and he drove the victory in Virginia. But Winsome Sears was at every rally with him. And this new lieutenant governor-elect of America is going to be a superstar and is going to tour the country as the articulate defender of freedom and opportunity, the antithesis of CRT, though she is herself African-American. She's a Marine. She's inspiring. She was on Hannity two nights ago, and I love the fact that she managed to talk about, I'm no longer the president of the Nixon Foundation. I'm just a board member now. I laid down executive responsibilities. We elected a new board member two days ago. And so Jim Byron is now the president of the Nixon Foundation. But I love that she mentioned Nixon to Hannity unprompted. Cut number 25.
Well, I tell you, the first person who ever really talked about black business equals black power was Richard Nixon. Black business equals black power. Imagine that. All this time, it appears that Nixon was a homeboy. What we're going to do is we need someone who has sensible ideas, sensible solutions, because, you know, the message is important, but the messenger is equally important. And what I want to say to black people, Asian people, whatever, minorities, Latinos, whatever, don't allow political parties to divide us. Don't allow political parties to use whatever grievances that have been historically against you to force you to look at them as the savior so that they can swoop in and think they're saving you when all they're doing is pitting one race against the other, one race against the other. You'll notice, for example, that what was happening with Asians, it was young black men, and they were attacking Asians, but nobody wanted to say anything about it. If you can't identify the problem, then how can you come up with a solution? So we've got to stop this divisiveness. There's a psalm that I live by. I used it in my campaign, and it's Psalm 133. How good and pleasant it is when brothers and sisters live together in peace and harmony. That's what we want.
And that's what I want. What a great way to start a Friday. Winsome Sears, lieutenant governor-elect. She went on to say this to Sean Hannity on Wednesday night, cut number 26.
Well, here's the thing. When you look at a birth certificate for a black child, does it say you must vote Democrat every time, all the time? Otherwise, you're not black. And for the white child, does it say you can vote any way that you want, any choice that you want? Always and forever. I mean, who made up those rules for us? You know, and so the Democrats, they really don't have the solutions. And so when you look at the Democrat-run cities, the Democrat-run counties, states, they're losing. The neighborhoods are the worst. The schools are the worst. Everything, it's the worst. And so they move from Democrat-led states, come to Republican-led states, and they ruin it, forgetting when you came here, it was fine. And now it's changed because you brought the same policies with you that ruined the state you just left. So, you know, what I want for us as black people, just leave us alone. If you want to vote Democrat, then do so. You want to vote libertarian? Do so. Whatever you want to be it. This is America. This is freedom. Who died and left you in charge of all of us as black people so that we could be corralled into doing what you want us to do? I thought you said that you were the tolerant folks. If you're tolerant, that means you allow other ideas to percolate. You don't want just ideas that you agree with, because then you see we wouldn't be living in America. We would be living in a totally different country. Nobody wants that.
I find her so refreshing, so absolutely vital to America. I'm going to talk about critical race theory in a second, but first let's do the rundown. My very favorite story, Stephen Sweeney, New Jersey Senate president, loses to Republican truck driver. Mr. Durr has a 2,298 vote lead over one of the ruling class of New Jersey. And the ruling class will come up, I think, today when I talk about it with Dr. Larry Ard and Glenn Elmers in their book, The Soul of American Politics. Wednesday's aftermath shows us that the ruling class does not like to lose, as they lost in Virginia. Terry McAuliffe, very much of the ruling class. There's no deep state, but there's very much a self-appointed ruling class that lives in legacy media. It lives in the Democratic Party. It is weaponized in CRT and in schools, and they don't like to lose. You'll hear about that in hour three today. But they lost to a truck driver who spent $295 because Stephen Sweeney thought he could not be toppled. Okay, the biggest story of the day is President Biden is imposing a vaccine mandate on workers across the United States. It is unconstitutional. I want you to understand that. Governors can do this. Governors have the police power. The federal government is a government of limited and enumerated powers that are delegated to Congress and sometimes end up as a statute. And there is no statute specifically allowing the president to do this. They're going to dress it up in an Occupational Safety and Health Administration regulation. It will fall. I believe it will fall. OSHA's vaccine mandate overkill, the Wall Street Journal lead editorial today. The 490-page Biden rule is unnecessary and needlessly divisive. That it is. Now, I believe in vaccines. I hope if you're not vaccinated, you'll get vaccinated. I hope you get a booster. If it's been 6 months since your second vaccine shot, you can get any booster that's available. And I hope if you have a healthy child between 5 and 12 who had not previously had the vaccine, that you'll take them in and get them vaccinated like you would against polio. I think it's good science and good parenting and good for you, protects you. But some people make different choices, and they don't want to get it. For a variety of reasons, none of my business. And if they're not working for me, I can't make them do it. And the only person in the government who can make them do it is a governor of a state, if such authority is in the Constitution for the governor of the state to deploy it. The president doesn't have the authority. Always begin with, is it constitutional? This isn't. Couple of still coming stories from Politico. Senate GOP sees Youngkin's trope as Trump approach as path back to majority. Well, yes. Where he's wildly popular, as Marco Rubio said he is in Florida, you put your arms around Donald Trump and you run. Where he's wildly unpopular in Virginia and New York State and California, you let him call into his supporters. You can't win with just MAGA people, and you can't win without them as a Republican. This is a paraphrase of what Richard Nixon used to say about the Goldwater people. You can't win with just the Goldwater votes, but you can't win without them. And, it's not like rocket science. People have known this forever. How Glenn Youngkin kept Trump's at arm's length but on his side. You know what I don't know? I don't know if the former president and the future governor of Virginia talked. My guess is they did. My guess is they both had an interest in making sure they won and didn't give the media a club with which to club Glenn Youngkin. So the day after the disaster, Wednesday and Thursday, the Democrats scuttled around trying to figure out what to do. So yesterday, Nancy Pelosi announced a quick push for quick votes on both of the big bills, the reconciliation bill that spends, they say it spends $1.75 trillion. Joe Manchin said, no, it doesn't. It spends twice that. And then the infrastructure bill, which spends $1 trillion. And so Nancy Pelosi was getting hammered for losing Virginia and losing New Jersey and losing races all across the United States. And they're looking at losing 50 seats next November. I will take 20. Actually, I'll take 6. I just want control of the chamber back in responsible hands and out of Nancy Pelosi, who's no doubt going to quit. Nancy Pelosi says, well, I'm going to pass both of these votes, both of these bills, and it's going to be the Senate's problem, and we'll take up what they send back. Only problem with that is she can't even find the votes to pass the Biden bonanza bill, BBB, because it's got this massive expansion of the IRS in it, for one thing. So every Democrat who votes for that is going to run into ads about them saying, thank you for voting to expand the IRS. I had no problems with the IRS, but most Americans don't feel like I do. And they're going to have this giant IRS coming at them. I have problems with tax laws. Tax laws. House Democrats near vote on a $1.75 trillion spending measure. We have been hearing that for 2 weeks, getting near a vote, and we haven't heard it. Now, those of you who know that Russia, Russia, Russia was always garbage, garbage, garbage. The indictment of Igor Danchenko cast new doubts on the sourcing of the Steele dossier. John Durham brought in his third indictment yesterday, more on the way. Igor Danchenko arrested, charged with lying to FBI about the information in the Steele dossier, according to the Washington Post. But the story I'm going to come back with next is the story that I think will matter the most to you.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about American standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
Friday, that means the weekend's ahead. Another Ohio State win, a Browns victory Monday ahead. We're going to beat the Bengals in Cincinnati. It's going to be a great weekend. Now, I have to tell you all that CRT is going to take more and more of my time because when the media, all tell legacy media, I am alternative media. I have been for 31 years, whether it was on the set of PBS or on the set of Meet the Press or on ABC's This Week or on anywhere that I've been on legacy media. I've always been the conservative voice on my own radio show. I'm the host, but this is alternative media, and the Salem News Channel is alive and well and spreading out like algae in a pond. We're going to cover the entire thing. We're going to grow a little bit, double every day, and I want you to tell all your friends, just turn off the regular TV. You're not getting any truth from the news networks. They're no longer news networks. They are Democratic Party affiliates. It is that simple. So the Salem News Channel is center-right, and it's very much for people who want news and analysis, the news that you need. You know, a meteor struck California. I'll tell you about that if there's an earthquake or a typhoon or anything like that. News. I'll give you murder rates. I'll give you data and then analysis. What's going on? This is an analytical segment. It's about CRT. But it's based on a New York Times article that I'm going to read to you and then comment. So this is the, quote, news, air quotes, from the New York Times. California tries to close the gap in math, but sets off a backlash, subhead. Proposed guidelines in the state would de-emphasize calculus, reject the idea that some children are naturally gifted, and build a connection to social justice. Critics say math shouldn't be political. If everything had gone according to plan, writes J.C. Furton, California would have approved new guidelines this month for math education in public schools. But ever since a draft was opened for public comment in February, the recommendations have set off a fierce debate over not only how to teach math, but also how to solve a problem more intractable than Fermat's last theorem, closing the racial and socioeconomic disparities in achievement that persist at every level of mathematics education. The California guidelines, which are not binding, could overhaul the way many school districts approach math instruction. The draft rejected the idea of naturally gifted children, recommended against shifting certain students into accelerated courses in middle school, and tried to promote high-level math courses that could serve as an alternative to calculus, like data science or statistics. The draft also suggested that math should not be colorblind, and that teachers could use lessons to explore social justice, for example, by looking out for gender stereotypes in word problems or applying math concepts to topics like immigration or inequality. The battle over math comes at a time when education policy on issues including math testing and teaching around racism has become entangled in bitter partisan debates.
The Republican candidate for governor in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, seized on those issues to help propel him to victory on Tuesday. Now Republicans are discussing how these education issues can help them out in the midterm elections next year. Even in heavily Democratic California, a state with 6 million public school students and an outsized influence on textbook publishing nationwide, the draft guidelines encountered scathing criticism and charges that the framework would inject woke politics into a subject that is supposed to be practical and precise. You think? Of course it will. This is exactly what we've been talking about. It's exactly what we'll continue to talk about. I went to Catholic schools. Now, that didn't mean that there was Catholic math or Catholic chemistry or Catholic physics or Catholic calculus. It meant that the air that we breathe and the rooms in which the crucifix held and the priests that were in the hallways and the nuns that taught religion were ever present. Catholic schools were Catholic. CRT schools are CRT schools. And this is an explosion of CRT in the country's most influential education system. What a nightmare. Equity in math. I'd rather that they actually learn math. And by the way, if you've never met a gifted child in math, you aren't looking. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
Welcome back, America. That music means it's time for our Friday Look at the Movies with Sonny Bunch, official movie critic of the Hugh Hewitt Show, rolling in airline miles with which I pay him, but I have to warn him. Good morning, Sonny. How are you?
I'm good, Hugh. How are you?
Good. I've often accused you of failure to warn over the years, and I have to warn you that we have a Marvel comic books hobbyist in studio. He's a butler beagle. John Schroeder often writes at the website hughhewitt.com, and he stopped by the studio this morning because he knew you'd be talking about the Eternals, and he knows you're wrong. He's anticipating being wrong, and he just wants to get an early start on critiquing Sonny Bunch's wrong take on a Marvel's movie, because I don't think you can ever satisfy the Marvelverse, can you?
Well, it's interesting. So Eternals, which drops this weekend, is actually right now currently with 226 reviews on RottenTomatoes.com. I'm looking at the website right now. Is the first rotten Marvel movie. It is the first movie to get a green splat from the critics that is made by the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Now, Sonny, you always are contrarian. Did you love the movie?
Oh, boy, Hugh, I really wanted to love it because I wanted to be able to write this is the best Marvel movie. I wanted to be able to write that piece. Unfortunately, I can't. It's not very good, sadly. I did not, unfortunately, care for Eternals too much. I saw it last night. I literally saw it about 8 hours ago. I got out of the theater. So it's still fresh in my mind.
So you slept on it, and having slept on it, what do you have to tell our audience about it?
Yeah, so Eternals is directed by Chloe Zhao, who recently won the Best Director Oscar for her film Nomadland. It is, again, it's from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is a big Marvel movie. It's a big budget action-adventure spectacular. It's an epic. It's 157 minutes or some such nonsense. Very, very long. At the end of the day, it's really just not very good. And I'll tell you why it's not very good. Well, let me explain what's going on in this movie. So Eternals is based on a series of comics by Jack Kirby, Jack the King Kirby. The long and the short of this, the history of this comic is that Jack Kirby left Marvel Comics for DC Comics to start a new line of books at DC called The New Gods. It was going to be a whole new mythos, right? And those comic books bombed. Nobody was interested in them. So he went back to Marvel and he started the Eternals books. And those books also bombed. Nobody really cared about them. It's this big kind of cosmic space opera-y type story. And over the years, people have come around on them. They're well regarded by the comic book critics, but they're
you're getting thumbs up by huge. Schroeder, by the way. So you're accurately portraying Jack yeah. the King Kirby. It's a review of a review in real time for me.
Oh, that's good. That's good. But so these are based on kind of classic but not terribly well known characters. The very briefest, I'm not going to tell you all of the characters in this movie because there's about 100 different characters in this movie. But the Eternals are essentially they're immortal, superpowered beings who have been sent to Earth by the godlike celestials to protect Earth from deviants, which are in this movie essentially CGI lizards that emerge from the ocean to eat human beings. The goal of the Eternals is to protect human life and all sentient life around the universe from the deviants, because deviants hate sentient life. I will not spoil this except to say that this is a half truth at best that has been propagated by the Celestials to the Eternals. The biggest problem with this movie, and this is going to sound very funny coming from me because I am well known as a fan of the DC comic book movies, but the real problem with this movie is that the MCU has made a DC movie. And what I mean by that is that they have made a movie that has it has a philosophical idea at its core. It is a movie about God and faith and free will and humanity and all of that, which is, again, it calls to mind what the DC comics were doing with the idea of, you know, what would the world be like if God showed up on Earth? What would the world be like if Superman showed up on Earth? How would that change everything, right? And they're trying to do something similar here. They don't really do a very good job of it. And if you look at the writing credits on this movie, there are something like 5 or 6 different people credited. There are 3 different discrete entities credited with the screenplay credits. It's a mess. So they don't really do a very good job with that. But on top of that, it doesn't have the say what you will about the DC Comics movies, but at least they had a very discrete style, right? They have, like, you know, people like or don't like Zack Snyder, but at least he has a style to his action sequences. And the big knock on Marvel, and I think it's a fair knock, is that the big action sequences in Marvel movies all look very flat. They're all kind of they have a house style, which is these kind of big, spectacular CGI battles that are directed by second unit guys, and they all look exactly the same. And they all look kind of flat and, you know, CGI and weightless at the end of the day. So this is like a DC movie, or the worst parts of the DC movies, and it's like an MCU movie, but the worst parts of the MCU movies. And that's why I think it is the first rotten Marvel movie. I think a lot of people are just kind of put off by this combination of house styles. The movie doesn't work for me, Hugh. It doesn't work for me.
So, Sonny, here's my question in the interest of Marvel moviegoers everywhere. Does the first one, which may be a swing and a miss, set the ground for subsequent movies based on, are there any interesting characters from whom there could be spun off either television or more movies to populate the Marvelverse?
Well, this is a Marvel movie, so there were 2 post-credits sequences that are setting up various different things. I mean, this is the problem. This is another problem with Eternals, is that we are at the point in the Marvel Cinematic Universe where we have moved beyond characters that even I, somebody who grew up reading Marvel comics, am familiar with. You know, the stinger in this movie are the introduced 3 characters. I have no idea who they are. I've never read any comics with any.
What are their names?
I don't want to spoil the post credit stingers.
Okay,
I'll just say that they're two of these characters are more cosmic-minded characters. Again, never heard of them. One of the characters is a British superhero who, again, I had heard of but had never read any of the comics. Again, we've extended beyond my knowledge. And this is another problem, I think, for the MCU, is that they are starting to get into very much like third and fourth tier characters. You know,
In the distant realms of my memory, Sonny, because I was a Marvel kid, not a DC kid, there was a giant figure who kind of loomed over everything. He was bald, and I don't know what he was. He was the Watcher of the World. Yeah. Does he show up in the credits? Because I've been waiting for the Watcher to show up someday.
The Watcher has been in the series that has been on Disney Plus called What If. What If is this series of alternate history Marvel. It essentially asks, like, what if something was different in the Marvel Universe? So the first episode is, what if Peggy Carter became Captain America instead of Steve Rogers, right? And then it tells the story of what would have happened if in the... So the Watcher is in all of those. I'll put it that way.
My question to you, Sonny, is it a good thing for movies that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby invaded cinema? Because it is a whole different universe of cinema. It's like the Big Bang happened when Iron Man came out. And it's just, it's an expanding universe, and it's getting bigger, and it's swallowing things. Is it to the bad or the good of movie making?
That's a hard question to answer. I mean, look, I will say objectively speaking, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is the most successful and most popular franchise that has ever been made ever. More popular than Star Wars. More popular than James Bond. Like, it is the most popular and most successful franchise in the history of the world. You have to give a lot of credit to Kevin Feige, who is the producer who kind of spearheaded all of this. And you have to give a lot of credit to the filmmakers that they have been able to rattle off such a string of both frankly competent artistically. Even the Marvel movies I didn't like, I am happy to recognize are... generally speaking, successful pieces of storytelling. And this is the real problem with Eternals, is that it is just not a very good piece of storytelling. I mean, there are individual actors who do very good job. I really like Kumail Nanjiani in this as Kingo is the character he plays. He's very funny. He's got a human valet called Karun, who, again, it's like kind of classic Marvel comedy, very funny. There's the guy who plays Gilgamesh. His name is Don Lee. Again, very funny. He plays Gilgamesh as kind of a happy warrior type. And like, there are little individual things in this movie that work and are very good. But the thing as a whole doesn't work. And that is unusual for a Marvel movie. I mean, they have been very, very good at making discrete, impressive pieces of storytelling that have all worked. Is this good for cinema as a whole? I mean, look, I if you ask theater owners, they'll tell you it's good because you know what the movies have done. They've brought a lot of people into the theaters. The Marvel movies have been extremely successful. You can't argue with their business. Is it good for cinema as an art form? I think not, probably. I mean, these are better thought of as television episodes, right? This is the 26th episode of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's not really a movie. They're so connected, and they've kind of changed how people watch movies. Just one small anecdote: when people got done watching Dune, when Dune stopped, when the movie
stopped,
when the credits started, people sat around in theaters waiting for a post-credit scene, and were angry when they didn't get one. And that is the kind of thing that Marvel has. It has trained people to watch movies in a different way, and not necessarily a better way.
Sonny, I want to return to this. I may devote an hour and get Schroeder to call in as well, because I'd love to. I want to think about it. I need someone to tell me the scope of the Marvel meteor on movie making, because it's enormous, and I don't know if it's going to kill all the dinosaurs or launch a new age, but. We know now that the Eternals is not necessary. Sonny Bunch on Twitter, the movie master, official movie. We might send him some extra airline miles for this week's presentation. Sonny Bunch also across the movie aisle, and the bulwark goes to the movie is two podcasts. I need to go to ReliefFactor.com because it's that time of the day. There it is. It's Friday. I'm spending the weekend with grandchildren. That means picking up a two-year-old. That means I will hurt on Monday. But that's okay. It's worth it. Aaron, two-year-olds are not made for 65-year-old backs. That's all I'm here to tell you. But there isn't a 65-year-old grandpa with a two-year-old that doesn't pick them up all the time, even if the fetching Mrs. Hewitt is saying, don't pick up that baby. I'll do it. But ReliefFactor.com makes it possible to do it repeatedly, as often as two-year-old wants, because that's what Babas are for. And ReliefFactor.com is for Babas, but they're also for 20-year-olds who are going to do a marathon this weekend, or did a marathon, the Marine Corps Marathon last week, virtually, whatever your ache and pain is, for whatever reason. Give ReliefFactor.com a try. Sonny, thank you. Doug Lemarise is next with the College Football Playoff Show podcast predictions. Stay with us. Welcome back, America. It's Friday. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, welcoming in Doug Lemarise. Doug is, of course, the co-host of the College Football Playoff Show podcast with Shahan Rajahat. I screwed it up again with Shahan. Doug, I've asked you to stick around for the second hour, the first, because the biggest story in sports is OBJ. And I listened to your take on OBJ yesterday. I'm going to foreshadow that it's my take on OBJ. I want you to explain it to people because we're grown-ups. That's the difference between the rest of the world. You and I are you're 20 years younger than me, but I'm 20 years. Most sports writers think the OBJ story is a story that needs explaining, and I need you to explain it. But first, the College Football Playoff Show podcast. What was the most important college football game last week and the most important coming forward? And by the way, my copy of The Road to Ohio State arrived this week, and it's fabulous.
Well, I appreciate that, Hugh. Thank you very much. But the big game last week was Michigan-related, right? It was this Michigan-Michigan State game that was a high-quality game. Somebody had to win, somebody had to lose, but here's the idea that those teams both played that well. Michigan State won. Michigan State was then number three in the initial playoff ranking. 2 weeks from now, November 20th, Michigan State at Ohio State is a gigantic game. Could almost be a play-in game for the playoff because the Spartans played really well. Beat a good Michigan team last week. Mel Tucker, second year. He's a Cleveland native, Hugh. Mel Tucker, Cleveland native. Coming to Columbus on November 20th, so that win for Michigan State was gigantic.
Now, Mel Tucker, a Mel Tucker question. My son, one of them, went to the University of Colorado. He's still mad at Mel Tucker in the way that Florida fans are still mad at Urban Meyer. Do you expect Mel Tucker to move on at the end of the season to USC?
It's tough, man. Everybody's going to want him, right? I mean, sometimes when you're hot, you're hot. He is a Midwestern guy, right? He's went to Wisconsin. He coached for the Browns. He coached at Ohio State. So I could see him sticking around, but he also knows the SEC really well. He's been at Bama and Georgia, and LSU might be really interested. He could be in a tough spot to make a decision.
So you're right about it being a play-in game. I listened to the College Football Playoff Show podcast, and I understand you guys didn't like how they got there. I like the fact that Ohio State can play in. I figure they set it up that way. And they put Michigan State for its first and only time in the top four ever. And that was a good set of rankings. What's most important this weekend?
This weekend is an avoid the upset weekend, Hugh, because there aren't a ton of equal match games with the good teams. One to watch is Michigan State's going to Purdue. Purdue has a couple really good players. Michigan State's only favored by three, even though they're the number three team in the country. But one I like is the Washington-Oregon rivalry. Hugh, I'm always on alert when coaches talk about academics, because I get it, right? It's college stuff matters. But if you're talking about the academic prowess of your team in your college, it's only because you're not winning enough games. So Jimmy Lake, the Washington coach, took kind of a shot at Oregon this week and said, we don't recruit against Oregon because we're an academically better school. Oregon's number four in the country. Washington is 4-4 overall. Oregon versus Washington this week. When you start putting up the GPAs, it's like, all right, I get it. Your GPA is high. Go win
the right
field.
That's a signal of doom approaching. But wasn't Washington early on in the College Football Playoff Show podcast, wasn't Washington a thing for a couple of weeks?
Well, everybody really liked them. And then they lost their first game, and then they lost at Michigan and started 0-2. So that's when they went back to the chemistry lab.
Okay. Doug, before we go to break, you said some interesting things about the college football ranking playoff board, how it's 13 people. I didn't know any of this, by the way, and how journalists should be on it and analytics people should be on it, but that the athletic directors are on it now. And that was all very interesting to me. Did they do a good job?
They got sucked in by the Alabama aura, I thought. I thought Alabama at number two was too much about Alabama's reputation, and they have great players. I don't think their collection of what they've done this year. I think they fell into a little bit of groupthink in that room. They do have 13 dedicated, smart people, but when you all think the same way, you can start heading down one path. If you don't have a couple people who say, hey, wait, what if we think about it this way? And I don't think they had enough people stop them from getting sucked in this week.
You know, Jeharaja, I remembered it this time. Shahan was very upset. I thought he was going to have a stroke, but he's only like 23, so he can't have a stroke. What upset him so much?
He loves the underdog. He loves the little guy. And college football, it's very difficult for the little guy to break in to the big dog room. Cincinnati has done everything it could do as a non-Power 5 team. They beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a really good team. They've won all their games, and they were only number 6. This was the highest, I think, that any smaller school would ever have a chance to be in the rankings. Some people thought Cincinnati should be in the top 4. They're number 2 in the polls. They were number 6 in the playoff ranking. He likes the underdog. That's why he was so mad. But I mostly agree with him.
Yeah, well, you know, life isn't a Hoosiers movie. It's not going to work out that way. Cincinnati has to be good for 5 years. Doug LaMaurice is sticking around. And when he comes back, we're going to explain for the rest of the world OBJ, which for the life of me is the easiest thing in the world, but it has become drama fest across the United States. Doug has a great take on it. That we're going to switch from the College Football Playoff Show podcast to Orange and Brown Talk when we come back, because you need to know about OBJ, Baker, and everything that matters in the NFL, because it's Friday on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Stay with us, America. Sorry, America. Bonjour. Hi, Kennedy. Hugh Hewitt live inside the Beltway. Hour 3 today on Friday. Hillsdale Dialogue coming up. Hour 1, I did Sonny Bunch, Doug LaMaurice on the College Football Playoff Show podcast. But this is a different Friday. I've asked Doug to actually stick around because there's a big story in sports. And the big story is in Cleveland. And Doug covers the Browns at the Orange and Brown Talk. He also covers the Buckeyes at Buckeye Talk. But Orange and Brown Talk is not only in the midst of a transition with Ellis Williams leaving and the new person, whose name I can't remember, Doug.
Ashley Bastock.
Ashley. It's like a TV series in the fourth season substitutes an actor for a familiar character, and it takes a while. So, Doug, Odell Beckham Jr. came to Cleveland and was on the cover of Sports Illustrated 3 years ago. He is having an interest. Well, you tell everybody this because I thought your conversation and assessment of this was 100%.
Yeah, so he's been unhappy with how often he gets the ball. His dad posted the video on social media that shows all the times that Odell looks open and didn't get the ball. People got upset about that. They thought it was a shot at Baker Mayfield. And now Odell Beckham Jr. has been excused from practice the last 2 days. And there's a lot of reports that Odell Beckham's representatives in the Browns front office are working on his release. And there are some reports that he may be released by the Browns today. And I just sort of thought maybe he can get in a room and work it out, that Odell Beckham Jr. has not talked to his quarterback or his coach since this stuff came out. And I know that you can get mad at each other and you don't have to be best friends, but I thought maybe you could still play football together on the same team and still find a way to work this out. It's been really unfortunate because Odell Beckham Jr. and Baker Mayfield really haven't been healthy and functional together at the same time. So I still thought there was hope for the last 9 games of the regular season. It feels like it's not going to work out for you. This may end in the next few hours, and he may not be a Brown. But I just kind of wanted him to get some dinner and everybody try to work this out, because I think sometimes something comes to a head. You hit bottom, and then you can move on and build a better relationship. So that might have been Pollyanna thinking by me, but I would have taken a shot.
No, it was not Pollyanna. In fact, Mary Kay is the homeroom teacher of Orange and Brown Talk. And everyone goes to her because she covered the Browns for the longest. She's the beat reporter. Everyone else is an analyst. And Dan Labby is a very fine sports writer and broadcaster, is of the opinion that this is an end of the world story and that Kevin Stefanski has to take a stand or Andrew Berry has to take a stand. And I think you said, I don't want to misrepresent you. Wait a minute. These are millionaires. That's a Terry Pluto line, by the way. Remember, you're talking about millionaires who get paid a lot to play a game. You got to get along in the world in which we live with people that you don't like. And I have been in broadcasting for 30 years, and there are a lot of knuckleheads in broadcasting. And you know what? You go to work. And, you know, I've been working with Dwayne for 20 years. So we obviously were like the lock ones, but we're fine. And I do not understand how anyone could come to the conclusion that you cut him, because he's a receiver of some talent who will go to the Ravens. I mean, is this even in anybody, is it in doubt that he'll go to the Ravens?
Sure feels like that way to me, right? We may, again, we may find that out very soon, that he very well could end up with the team that the Browns need to finish ahead of and may have to play on the field in their last nine games to get to the playoff. And I do still think he has talent. So it really is a rough spot. They do have a guy, Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's a second receiver who will probably slide in. But I just still think having him on your team in some way and keeping him off another team, those are two positives. He's still with you doing something, and he's not somewhere else. Those are two things that I still think could help the Browns, even though it's been clunky so far. I get it. But also, we maybe don't know. I don't know what else may have gone on, if there have been previous disagreements. But I do believe in a world of millionaires, a lot of players have supported Odell. You know, you have, coaches have to work with those players. Like, you don't have to always see eye to eye, but you have to function together. So I do think, I don't think there has to be a bad guy in this, Hugh. If the situation stinks, it's been a little rough. So, I don't know that you have to blame Odell or Baker or Kevin Stefanski or anybody, but I just would have kept fighting to try to make it work. And let's figure out, can we just get nine more Sundays out of this, even if it's not a perfect fit, it still might be good enough.
Yeah, Jarvis Landry is also on the Cleveland Browns for the benefit of people who follow some other team that isn't the most important team. Jarvis Landry is a grown-up. He's acting like a grown-up. His language can be salty, but he hadn't said anything. I thought Baker and Kevin Stefanski acted like grown-ups and not saying anything. I assume Andrew Berry told them not to say anything because he's the boss and he's in charge of the front office. But I go back to the conversation that people had on Orange and Brown Talk yesterday, which is they're millionaires playing a game. This isn't college football. You've covered college football. Ohio State had a blow up this year. A linebacker stormed off the field and went into the portal. It was like a scene from a comic book. He disappeared into the portal and he's gone because he got mad and he's a kid. Well, these people are only 25 or 27 years old. They're not really parents. Until you're a parent, you actually don't have perspective on anything. That's the Hugh Hewitt view of the world, because you don't. Do they ever just sit down and say, gosh, we have, life has been so good to us, maybe we should take care of the fans first? Do you think they ever have that conversation?
Maybe. I do think it's very hard. These are high achieving people who have had success their whole lives. And usually what they've done has worked because they have proof. I'm at the highest level. I'm one of the best at what I do. And football, man, you got to work hard to be good at football, no matter how much talent you have. So I do think when you get to the top level, sometimes you see things through your own lens because your own lens has got you where you are. So you have proof, evidence, time after time after time, that what you do is right, because I wouldn't be here otherwise. So I think that can be difficult. Money changes everybody. It is a lot of individual. It's a team sport for sure, but you have to have individual excellence. And I do think sometimes it's okay to like treat different excellent players differently, because people come at things different ways. And I've thought that Odell is a lot like an artist sometimes, right? That he has a certain way he does things, and the same things that make him great can also make him difficult to deal with at times. But you don't get to pick and choose with people. You take the whole package, because if you took out some of the essence of what Odell is, you also would lower his talent level because he does it a certain way. So they've tried it for 3 years. I get that it's clunky. He wasn't going to be here next year anyway. The way that the salaries work, the salary cap with the Browns, this was definitely his last year no matter what. So it's like, can you squeeze out nine more games? I thought maybe do whatever you have to do to squeeze out nine more games. But it's just not going to be that way. I think it sounds like it might.
He's got to play somewhere because he doesn't have a contract for next year, and he's got to prove his worth, or he'll end up signing a one-year deal somewhere to prove his worth. It's not in his interest to have this happen. But I want to conclude, Doug Lamoriis, and maybe it'll be on Orange and Brown Talk. You've already done this, and it's already in the can. Is there any other aspect of life where we care what somebody's parent thinks? You know, if my mom and dad are both gone, if they ever posted something on Twitter, no one would care. And the president of the United States, we sometimes have human interest story and their mom and dad, not President Biden, they're gone. But usually we'll get a nice thing on Richard Nixon's mother, Hannah, at the White House when he was becoming president. Nobody cares outside of athletics what the parents think. Why is that a thing in sports?
I don't know. Because, again, Odell didn't do anything, right? His dad posted a video that hurt people's feelings. And then Odell didn't apologize quickly enough for some people. So I guess if you think it's coordinated, if you think there's some kind of plan, but my mom always said, like, blame her for stuff. She'll take the blame for me, right? But that whatever she would do, I wouldn't be held accountable for what my parents said, because guess what? And Odell's dad even said this. He said, I'm a parent first. So Odell's dad is not looking out for the best interest of the Browns. He's looking out for his son, because that's what parents do.
That's our job is.
Odell doesn't love the Browns still. I thought that was a little odd.
All right, Zach, last question for you. It has nothing to do with football. You told a story about being in the drive-through lane at McDonald's, I think in Bloomington, where you got stuck and you ended up having to get. I just had a question. I've been there and I've done that. It's the McDonald's in San Clemente on the way from San Diego to Los Angeles. If you stop at the wrong time and you're in the lane, you can't get out. You're there for an hour. When you go through that lane and you get your order and the fries are cold, do you A, go back into the park the car, go into the restaurant and try and get hot fries, B, throw the fries out the window, or C, eat the fries?
So I am a grumpy customer sometimes, Hugh, but in the pandemic world where things are difficult for businesses, I do have more respect for anybody who's showing up and doing the job, even if my fries are colder than I would like. Old Doug might be throwing the fries against the drive-through window. New Doug is probably saying, well, I'm glad you came to work today. I'll eat the fries as is and move on with my day.
That's a great attitude. I would eat the fries without even thinking. Doug Lamoriis, Orange and Brown Talk, Buckeye Talk, and, of course, the College Football Playoff Show podcast. Thank you, Doug. I'll be right back. OBJ, stay in Cleveland. Win a Super Bowl. Really, winning changes everything. Everybody, kumbaya, get together. Let's get back to politics right after the break here on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. It's Friday. I often do things differently. Danielle Hitchin is, of course, a great author who you've heard on the show before. And I always like to put forward Danielle because she developed a line of books for preschool children. Danielle Hitchin, welcome back to the program. Good to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Hugh. I appreciate you having me on today.
Now, I love your books so much. I want you to set everyone up on what they are, how many they are, where they find them, and tell us about your new project.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Baby Believer books are all primer-style board books designed to teach babies, toddlers, and preschoolers the core beliefs of the Christian faith through basic concepts like counting, opposites, animals, etc. You can find them all on my website, which is babybeliever.com, but you can also get them on Amazon and christianbook.com.
Give us an example. Give us the first one you did, which is the counting book, which I've given to every infant or the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt has as a baby present for the last 5 or 7 years since you wrote it.
Yeah, so our first book is First Bible Basics, A Counting Primer, and it teaches the core tenets of the Christian faith through counting. So we start with one God, two natures of Jesus, he's fully God and fully man, the three persons of the Trinity, all the way on up through the eight Beatitudes, the nine fruits of the Spirit, and the Ten Commandments. And one thing I love, go ahead.
It's beautifully illustrated and children can chew on it.
Yes, it is. It definitely is. It's gorgeously illustrated. The art is just stunning, and my illustrator is fabulous.
So how many of those board books have you done that are the basics of the Christian faith made accessible for moms with toddlers and babies to read, like they read their first books?
So we currently have eight books in our series, and we have a variety of types. We've got counting, movements, opposites, animals, emotions, anatomy, alphabet, and shapes. So we basically run the gamut, and now we're looking to expand into Spanish translations of our work. So our first project is to translate First Bible Basics into Primeros Principios Biblicos as a counting primer for Spanish-speaking families, and we are working right now to fund that via Kickstarter.
Now, first, do you want me to kind of assist in the translation, given my Spanish skills? Okay,
sure.
Second.
You're welcome
since
to
I,
do that.
Since I can't do that.
No, she doesn't want to do that.
Okay, I can now promote the start Kickstart. Where do they find Kickstart? How much do you need to raise? Because these all make money once they get going. People need to be in there.
Yes, once they get going. So the Kickstarter is unique for us because generally we partner with a publishing house to print and distribute our books. But foreign language translations are a little bit complicated, and so in order to bring this to market as fast as we possibly could, we decided to go the self-publishing route, and that's why the Kickstarter is really essential. Now, the Kickstarter won't be successful unless it's 100% funded by November 23rd. We need to raise $14,000, and we're about 25% of the way there right now. So if anybody wants to help us with the Kickstarter campaign, they can go to babybeliever.com. There's a link right from the homepage that says take me to the Kickstarter, and that's the best place to find and support the Kickstarter work.
Now, the reason I want people to do this, and the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I will kick in there as well, is because evangelization begins in the arms of a parent reading books to children. Whatever books they read will stick. People will remember it for their lives, even if they don't consciously remember everything about it. And so getting these into Spanish matters a lot to me because I think Danielle's done a great thing with these eight books. I mean, a really great thing. And my hat is off to Danielle Hitchin and to Biola, by the way. She's a proud Biola, whatever they are. Are they the Biola Beagles, like the Butler Beagles? What are they? The Biola what?
Biola Eagles.
The Biola Eagles. See, that's why it's like the Biola Eagles and the Butler Beagles. Okay, the Biola Eagles. They are so proud of you, but we've got to get this into Spanish because the enormous market in America and, of course, south of America is just vast. We need these little babies to read these things.
Absolutely. Spanish is the second most widely spoken language in the world, and we've had Spanish-speaking families asking us for years to get these books translated. So we are so excited to get these resources translated into Spanish and pushed out to various ministries and churches across the world.
Babybeliever.com. The Kickstarter needs to raise how much by when?
$14,000 by November 23rd.
And then that puts the book into Spanish, and then it goes from there based on the sales from the website, babybeliever.com.
That's exactly right.
Now, any idea how many copies of the first Baby Believer book are in print now, Danielle?
I know that we have sold upwards of 50,000 copies of the first book. We've sold, you know, several hundred thousand of our books across the board at this point. So it's really exciting to see them get out into the world. And, you know, I have heard from families across the world about the ways that these books are shaping their children and about shaping adult theology. I've even had pastors email me and tell me they ran into my books in a bookstore and decided to base a sermon series on each spread of one of my books. So it's been so overwhelming and delightful to see the ways that God is working through this project and shaping the hearts of little ones all across the world.
And I want them in Costco and Walmart in the set. And I want the Spanish set to catch up. Kickstarter for Danielle Hitchin. Go to babybeliever.com. Get her books. Give her some tin cup help to get this thing into Spanish because houses are suspicious of Spanish language books until they're not. And then they'll pick up the rest of them. Danielle Hitchin, thank you. That's my little Christian
education.
Thank you. It's my Christian education moment of the week. It's Friday. I do all sorts of fun stuff on Friday, including the Hilldale Dialogue America, Larry Aaron, Glenn Elmer's, the fifth of a five-part series on Harry Jaffe and all it means. Plus, We look at the Virginia election. Don't go anywhere, America. The Hillsdale Dialogue is next on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.